On this final Monday of June, it is a State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could join us. So we're taking stock of the state party conventions, the themes that emerged, what it means for the August primary. The state Republican Party convention was held last month in Middleton. The Democratic Party convention wrapped up yesterday in La Crosse. Join in on these gatherings, the issues, tentpole politics, 800-642-1234. Jesse Opoyan is the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Cap Times. Jesse, welcome back to the Ideas Network. Hi, Jesse. Can you hear us?
I can. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. So Jesse, why should we pay attention to state party conventions? Why do they matter?
Well, state party conventions are really where you see kind of the most fired up, engaged members of the two political parties coming together, talking about things like what they want on their party platform, the things policy-wise that are most important to them. And you also hear from the candidates who are running and in some cases may have an endorsement process as well.
What have you been your feelings as you've seen these conventions unfold in quite turbulent political times? We've had the January 6th hearings, of course, Roe versus Wade fell Friday. What do you make of the conventions in light of what's going on?
There's definitely some heightened sense of urgency, I think, particularly at the Republican Party convention that I was covering, just a few weeks ago. There is somewhat of a divide, really, among the party when it comes to things like relitigating the 2020 election and how much of a priority, if it should be a priority at all. And you do see both of the parties, I think, emphasizing abortion as an issue. Democrats, I think, are expecting to have their base pretty fired up by having Roe overturned. But, it's also an issue that's motivating for a lot of Republicans on the other side of it.
We have some audio here of Attorney General Josh Call addressing the convention Saturday. Let's hear it.
As Attorney General, my top priority is public safety. So let me be very clear about this. It does not serve the health or the safety of Wisconsinites to enforce a 19th century abortion ban. And we are not going to do it at the Wisconsin Department of Justice.
So that audio there, courtesy of WEAU-TV. Governor Evers said at the convention, clemency would be offered to anyone charged or convicted. Do you see, Jesse, the overturn of Roe, perhaps a uniting moment for Wisconsin Democrats?
It very well might be. This is, something that is widely supported. Access to legal abortion is widely supported both by Democrats and kind of the population as a whole, if you look at the most recent Marquette poll. So, having the convention fall within hours of Roe falling, I think was definitely energizing for a lot of Democrats who are paying attention to this and are looking to, people like the governor, the attorney general to see what the tone is going to be. Our state's Roe ban, our ban on abortion, would actually be up to local law enforcement. There's only so much that the folks at the top can do, but they can definitely set that tone and send a message down the pipe.
Looking at the Republican convention, how much were the 2020 false claims of voter fraud and how much was former President Trump a part of this event in the fabric of the event?
Looking at the 2020 election was definitely some kind of a shadow that was hanging over a lot of the convention. It's not necessarily a majority of the party. At least that's not what it seemed like while I was there, but it's a strong contingency within it. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was speaking in the morning at the convention and said, I'm going to say something that a lot of you aren't going to want to hear, and that's that we can't decertify the results of the 2020 election. And he actually got booed by a portion of the crowd, which is unusual for, one of the party's longtime leaders in the state. Later in the day, there was some votes on platform issues, and it was maybe about a third of the people there who voted who, wanted to continue to talk about decertifying the election, which, of course, is not actually legally possible. But it's still something that, a sizable chunk of Republicans there were interested in continuing to pursue.
Talking about Wisconsin State Republican and Democratic conventions with Jesse O'Poyan, who covers politics for the Cap Times, you can join in. Did you go to one of the conventions? What did you feel about the agenda, the speakers, amid the political climate right now and heading into the midterms? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jesse, at the Republican convention, they broke from that longstanding tradition to endorse a candidate in the primary race for governor. What did you make of that?
That was an interesting theme throughout the day. I mean, first there was a decision of whether to allow delegates to vote on the option of no endorsement. So, you know, there's certain thresholds that have to be met for a candidate to gain that endorsement. But adding the option of no endorsement meant that, you know, some of the candidates who maybe knew that they weren't going to reach that threshold to get the endorsement were able to strategize a little bit and say, well, you know, instead of voting for me or instead of voting for, you know, your second choice, go for no endorsement. And, you know, then no one walks away as a clear winner. And it was contentious. There were some people who were pretty frustrated that, you know, they attended the convention and didn't come away with an endorsement.
So five candidates on the ballot, August 9th primary. Who are the leading candidates? What do you see going on in this race?
Well, at this point, you know, the most recent Marquette poll that came out last week shows it pretty neck and neck between Tim Michaels and Rebecca Clayfish, so construction businessman and the state's former lieutenant governor. He was a late entrant into the race, but he's been advertising very heavily. He's got a lot of money to spend and has been on the airwaves pretty consistently. Whereas Rebecca Clayfish has, you know, been a Republican leader in the state for the last 10 years, running as lieutenant governor and going through the recall elections. She's been on the ballot a lot, so she's a familiar name, familiar face for a lot of Republican voters.
How much does money matter at this point in the primary where it is contested and they haven't met the final challenger in November?
It certainly matters. You know, you can't always guarantee when you're looking at things like fundraising that's going to be, you know, the automatic indicator of a winner. But, you know, when you've got candidates who are able to self-fund and you've got that in both parties right now in both of the primary races, you know, it takes a little bit of pressure off your campaign operation when you don't have to be out there dialing for dollars every day.
Talking with Jesse O'Poyan, the Cap Times Capital Bureau Chief, on this postmortem of state party conventions, the speeches, the votes by delegates, your takeaways on the energy of your party, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back for more State Cap in just a moment here on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're debriefing on the Republican and Democratic Party state conventions with Cap Times, Jesse O'Poyan here. In conversations we had earlier this month with the two party chairs, Democratic Chair Ben Wickler said these conventions are a sharp contrast to one another.
And at the Republican convention, over and over, you saw this battle about how far to go to undermine our democracy. I mean, a third of the voters there wanted to decertify the 2020 election.
Republican Chairman Paul Farrell told us it's their county-level grassroots support that is growing fast.
We're seeing counties that have 100% increase in membership. Some have gone from 150 to 300. We have one that's gone from 300 up to almost 600 in new members.
Join in on party politics, these conventions, and what it spells for the midterms, 800-642-1234. Jesse O'Poyan, Capital Bureau Chief at the Cap Times. We also have Rich Kramer, WPR journalist. Rich, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you were at the Democratic convention over the weekend. What did you find as the mood, certainly in the wake of Roe falling?
There was a lot of energy. People were fired up about the decision. They were fired up about, you know, pretty much any Republican that has ever signaled support for striking down Roe v. Wade or restricting abortion access whatsoever. Every speaker pretty much both nights mentioned that there was a impromptu abortion rights rally on Saturday. They kind of stopped the programming in order to hold that at the La Crosse Center in the city of La Crosse. And they say that they're just that's energized them very much for this fall.
What did you take away from Governor Evers and his words to the convention?
Well, the big thing from Evers was that he said he would grant clemency to doctors that might be prosecuted under the state's 173-year-old abortion ban. He didn't say that during his big keynote speech, but he did say that on the steps at the La Crosse Center during their rally. Also, Attorney General Josh Call said that he's not going to be dedicating any resources at the Department of Justice to investigating or prosecuting doctors for performing abortions. And he said, you know, the resources are strained enough. Like we already have to make decisions about what we pursue, he said. So he said he's definitely not going to go down that road.
He really underlined that his top priority is public safety, and this does not fall under that category.
Right, absolutely.
Jesse, I want to bring you in here, wondering about when you looked at the Republican convention and the role of U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, seemed to be a unifying force at the Republican convention. Of course, there have been more developments in the January 6th hearings, of course, Roe falling. What did you see as Johnson's role among Republicans at the convention?
Well, Ron Johnson really is, you know, the state's top elected Republican. He's the party's leader at this point. And he really carried on a theme that I think we first started hearing from him pretty heavily at the last Republican convention last year, which is talking about unity and, you know, trying to bring the party together and trying to focus on positivity, trying to focus on, you know, what the party's for as opposed to going after Democrats and tearing down their platforms. And that's kind of been the theme of a lot of the speeches that Ron Johnson's been given over the last few years, because, you know, the party is facing some, you know, warring factions within it, and it's his job to try to at least bring them together on the ballot, if not, you know, another situation.
Rich, 8 Democrats vying to face Johnson in the general election. What did you hear from the convention over the weekend from the people going against him?
Well, I focused mainly on the top 4 in terms of how they're doing in the polls. So that's you know, Alex Lazary, that's Mandela Barnes, Sarah Godlewski, and Tom Nelson. Every one of them on Sunday said that, you know, the filibuster in the Senate should be lifted. They support, you know, ending the filibuster, the 60-vote margin to block debate on bills. And they need to do that in order to codify Roe v. Wade into law. That was a big message. Tom Nelson went so far as to say that he supports adding justices, you know, expanding the Supreme Court. That was kind of the most, I don't know what you call it, the most out there. You didn't hear that from other candidates. So, again, abortion dominated. You know, one thing that I did notice is that during the two nights, I didn't hear the word inflation, hardly at all. I heard it from delegates that I talked to in the hallways. And, you know, the latest Marquette poll said that is like the number one concern by a mile from voters that were surveyed. But they would say rising costs. They would say anything but the I word.
The so I word.
Inflation. Yeah, it didn't come up much. It was really a specific choice that I just happened to key in on.
Jesse, what do you make of that? And what was it like at the Republican convention over, you know, the state of the economy and in the I word, inflation?
I mean, I do think Republicans see the I word, see inflation as a, you know, something that they should keep hammering on because it does affect everyone. And, you know, you go fill up your gas tank or go grocery shopping and it's staring you in the face. And, you know, it just so happens that there are Democrats in charge at the state level and at the federal level. And it, you know, it's pretty easy for them to pin that. In fact, the Republican Party put up some billboards in the La Crosse area over the weekend targeting Tony Evers and Joe Biden over just that.
Interesting. Talking about the Wisconsin State Democratic and Republican conventions, we have Jesse O'Poyen from the Cap Times, and we have Rich Kramer from WPR. Jesse, who had been at the Republican convention. Rich covered the Democratic over the weekend in La Crosse at the La Crosse Center. You can join in. What are your takeaways from the convention? Were you there? 800-642-1234. So, Rich, you know, how much does, you know, as you look at the convention yesterday, how much does abortion matter to the electorate? Could the issue sway an election?
Well, you know, it's hard to gauge the entire electorate, but, you know, as far as the attendees to the Democratic convention are concerned, they think that it's going to have a humongous impact. The Marquette poll did show that there was a bit of an enthusiasm gap between Republicans and Democrats, and people I talked to at the convention in La Crosse said, you know, they believe that that's essentially gone, that gap, because of Roe v. Wade. So they think it's going to be a huge issue. I even asked, like, you know, we're talking months down the road, and they said their people are still going to be fired up, you know, through August, through November, and beyond.
Jesse, how much do you think the abortion issue matters to the electorate at the ballot box?
You know, I think it remains to be seen, but I do think it does. I think it matters. You know, Rich mentioned the Marquette poll, and it was the second kind of most concerning issue for voters, certainly well behind inflation, but, you know, ahead of some other things like healthcare more broadly speaking. So, you know, and that poll was conducted before the decision came down. Obviously, we've been expecting it for some time now, but you know, it's going to be, you see candidates fundraising on it. It's going to be something that candidates continue, I think, to hammer. And, you know, I think a lot of the protests that we saw over the weekend indicate that there's some pretty strong energy around that right now. The question, I suppose, is, you know, how long can that be sustained?
Mm-hmm. Isaac from Madison called in, couldn't stay with us. Isaac wondering how journalists like you maintain a sense of objectivity and neutrality when reporting on state politics, Isaac says, given that Republicans are breaking so many political norms. Jesse, what are your thoughts there?
You know, for me, it's just I'm there to tell people stories. You know, I'm there to observe and, you know, let voters know what candidates and elected officials are prioritizing and, you know, in theory, vice versa. You've obviously got to hold people in power accountable. And, you know, that's just I'm there just sort of as the vessel, you know, in between voters who, you know, want to become more informed about democracy and hopefully participate.
Be that vessel. Yes. Rich, any thoughts there on objectivity and neutrality as you, you know, covered the convention over the weekend?
Yeah, I just try to be the fly on the wall, you know, stand in the back of the room. You talk with people and, you know, you can kind of hit it off with individuals. Some individuals you don't. But at the end of the day, it's just like any other story. I talk to them, hear what they say, you know, consider it and put it in a story. That's about it. So it's just kind of part of the daily routine for me to try to stay as objective as possible.
Well, I'm going to land here, Jesse, on redistricting. We have about a minute left. You know, we are going into this election year with the state Supreme Court adopting the new maps favorable to Republicans. What could this year's elections mean for future court battles over election maps?
Well, we have a joke here in Wisconsin politics, which is, you know, it's not how a bill becomes a law, it's how a bill becomes a lawsuit. And I think we're just going to continue to see all of these fights going to the courts. But like you said, the maps do favor Republicans, and that, you know, continues to be in place. And, you know, the party that's in power gets to continue, you know, setting those boundaries and setting those priorities over the next several years.
So as we get closer to August, Jesse, what are you watching for?
You know, everything that we've been talking about, how much does abortion matter? How much does inflation matter? And, you know, which party can, I think, weaponize? I think those are going to be the, you know, two of the top issues, and, which party can effectively, motivate voters heading into November. But obviously, we've got to get past the primary first, and that'll change, I think, a lot of the tone, you know, depending on which candidates come through.
Jesse and Rich, thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Jesse Opoyan is Capital Bureau Chief for the Cap Times in Madison. Rich Kramer of WPR Journalist covered the Democratic State Convention yesterday in La Crosse over the weekend. Ahead on the State Capitol Report, we look at the workforce shortage, inflation, and supply chain issues with the chief lobbyist of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They're out with their new employers survey. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Wisconsin Employer Survey is a snapshot of where employers are at on a number of economic issues. The survey is done twice a year by the state's largest business lobby, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which is here with initial findings from their new survey. Join in on economic indicators, supply chain, inflation, what policies most affect the business climate in our state. 800-642-1234. Scott Manley is Executive Vice President of Government Relations at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Scott, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me, and good morning, Kate, and good morning to your listeners.
Good morning. WMC still compiling responses from your latest employer survey, and I understand. How has the response been to this survey compared to past ones?
Well, it's been a robust response. I think a lot of the economic questions that we typically ask in this survey, and we've been doing this survey for many, many years, I think a lot of these questions, Kate, are top of mind for businesses. And what we're finding, unfortunately, is that since the last survey we did 6 months ago, we're seeing a noticeable drop in optimism in terms of how employers view Wisconsin's economy and how they view the U.S. economy as well.
That drop in optimism could be attributed to a number of things. We're seeing the high inflation being one of them. What issues were top of mind and most pressing for Wisconsin companies in the survey?
Well, it starts with the problem that they've been having for years now, and that's finding talent. 87% of employers said that they're having trouble hiring workers. It was 88% in the same survey 6 months ago. So we really haven't seen much improvement there. And of course, if you're an employer and you can't find workers, that creates all kinds of problems. Inflation is also a significant issue. When we ask the question about how much business costs have increased for things like raw materials and so forth, last winter, 47% of employers said that their costs had increased by 10%, so a little bit less than half. In this survey now, almost two-thirds, 65% of employers have said that their costs have increased by at least 10%. And in those manufacturing industries that involve metals, whether it's sheet metal or metal for making castings, a lot of those raw material costs, Kate, have increased by 100% or more. The metals industry is getting hit very hard. And so in many instances, these types of cost increases that employers are seeing for their raw materials haven't even been passed along to consumers yet. So unfortunately, as we look forward and what we might see with inflation, we may see, we may be on course for some continued long-term inflation, unfortunately.
On the issue of inflation. Inflation rate reached 8.6% in May, highest level in more than 40 years. But we're also seeing CEO pay in our country hit a record high last year. What are your members feeling about the majority of workers out there who have facing higher price inflation now, eroding, you know, the real value of what they earn? What does your survey say about that?
Well, we've seen wages go up, both in the survey that we did in the winter and the survey that we did now for workers, by percentage increases that, frankly, we've never seen before. So we've got employers that are raising wages far beyond what they typically have, and in, you know, very, very specifically, what we're seeing now are employers who say that the vast majority of them are going to be raising wages more than 4%. And that's remarkable, because it's wage increases have typically been in the range of 1 to 3%. Unfortunately, as you said, with inflation being what it is, inflation either entirely wipes out those wage increases, or takes workers going backwards, so that you might be looking at a 6% wage increase against an 8% increase in inflation. You're actually worse off than you were, and that's why so many economists refer to inflation as the cruelest tax, because it's really has a negative impact on take-home pay and really what families can afford.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment. Scott Manley with us, talking about the latest employer survey from the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They do a couple of these surveys each year and test what it is like out there for businesses in Wisconsin. You can join in with what your company is facing in these times. 800-642-1234. Scott, you know, earlier this year, your survey found companies were offering things like signing bonuses, more flexibility for their workers, among the higher wages, among other strategies to attract and retain their workforce. Do you think these are the types of tactics that are here for a while? Are they going away?
I think that we are going to continue to see wage increases for the foreseeable future. I think we are going to continue to see employers offering more flexibility to their workers in terms of the hours that are worked. For example, scheduling around daycare schedules and so forth. We will continue to see, where possible, employers allowing workers to work remotely and giving them that flexibility. That's very tough, obviously, in sectors like manufacturing and construction, where you literally have to be present in order to do the work. But yes, I think that a lot of what we are seeing from employers in terms of these tactics to try and make for a more friendly workplace and a better culture for their employees and so forth, I think that those are all long-term impacts.
Can you pinpoint, because, you know, manufacturing is very, very broad, can you pinpoint any areas in industries within manufacturing that are desperately in need of the most workers?
Well, it's really every sector of manufacturing, but I will say that welders, for example, are in incredibly high demand. Machinists and CNC machine operators are in very, very high demand. I think it's important to remember that Wisconsin is a national leader in manufacturing. We have more manufacturing jobs per capita in Wisconsin than any other state in the country. So it's the largest sector of our economy, and it's the sector that happens to pay the most. So we have these incredible, well-paying, family-supporting jobs that are really not even jobs, they're careers. Fantastic opportunities. We just need to get that word out and spread the word so that more high school kids who are graduating and thinking about what they want to do for a long-term career our understanding that they can do very, very well and have a very, you know, well-paying middle-class job with great benefits, you know, great health care, great 401k in the manufacturing sector.
You mentioned the youth and manufacturing. Governor Evers had announced $6.6 million in funding for youth apprenticeship opportunities, job training, upskilling in advanced manufacturing. What do you hope this funding would accomplish?
Well, we hope it accomplishes several things. And to be clear, WMC is a strong supporter of the apprenticeship program in Wisconsin and youth apprenticeships in particular. Hopefully, we do two things. Number one, we get more kids exposed to these types of careers. I think, as I just mentioned, a lack of awareness is a huge problem. So many kids, because of the way we've sort of structured our academic counseling in high school, so many kids think that the only opportunity for economic success is to go to a four-year college. And we definitely need kids to do that, but there's so many other opportunities. So if we can get some kids exposed to these types of careers in manufacturing and the construction trades through apprenticeships, that's huge. The other thing is just being able to upskill those kids and have them career ready by the time they graduate. The studies, the data are very clear that if you are engaged in a youth apprenticeship, you almost have a 100% chance of getting a job offer for the type of job that will allow you to have a family supporting job. And that's really important. It's important to the kids. It's important, you know, because they're going to be on the right track financially and career-wise. But it's important for employers too, because now they've got some additional talent that they have in their workplace that they can develop. And so it's really a win-win.
We've heard that businesses really want a talent attraction campaign, more marketing to help the worker shortage and attracting people from out of state or within Wisconsin. But we've been talking with CEOs on our show and hear consistently that workforce housing is a huge issue. That's a huge barrier with employment. So what are you seeing there with those tensions of trying to attract people into the state to go fill these jobs, and yet housing remains such a huge issue?
Yeah, it's sort of one of those chicken or egg issues. Is the housing not being built because the workers aren't coming here? Or is it, if you build it, they will come? And I don't think that there's a clear answer there. I will say that, especially in rural areas, housing for workforce purposes is in short supply. And one of the barriers is that because land prices are considerably lower in rural Wisconsin as opposed to the Madison area or the Milwaukee area, it's less profitable for developers to go into rural parts of the state and build housing developments. They can maximize their return on investment by building in large urban or suburban areas. And so that is a real problem. And we have to figure out how we can solve that issue and make it more enticing for builders and developers to go into areas like Arcadia, Wisconsin, where we've got the world's largest furniture manufacturer, or into north central Wisconsin or northwestern Wisconsin, where we've got some just tremendous career opportunities in the manufacturing sector. But we just can't bring workers in because we don't have the housing. The other piece of that I think is a problem, Kate, is the construction trades are having just as much difficulty as the manufacturing sector and every other industry in finding workers. So if we don't get kids involved in the construction trades and start bringing up the next generation of construction workers as the current generation is retiring and leaving the workforce, we're not going to have anybody to build the workforce houses. And that's a problem, too.
Scott Manley, Executive Vice President at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, unpacking the new employer survey and the challenges out there in the business climate. Join in on the state of business and industry in Wisconsin, what policies, what grants have helped your business grow in these times. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. We are unpacking the Summer Wisconsin Employer Survey from WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Executive Vice President Scott Manley is sharing preliminary findings from that survey. One thing that jumps out, nearly 90% of employers say they're having trouble hiring workers, about the same from their winter survey response. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. WMC Scott Manley with us for about 9 more minutes. As I said earlier, we've been making this concerted effort to talk directly with CEOs of Wisconsin-headquartered major companies that have been rooted here a long time. And, you know, Scott, we've also been looking at the infrastructure needs here in Wisconsin in the wake of the infrastructure law, $79 million coming to Wisconsin over 5 years. What do manufacturers tell you are their greatest needs infrastructure-wise to help their businesses grow?
Well, I think the biggest thing that manufacturers need is reliable and affordable energy. And that's a huge concern. Obviously, we've had news reports, I'm sure you're very aware of them, Kate, that the Midwest system operator that operates our electric grid has said that Wisconsin and the northern part of middle America is susceptible to potential power outages, either rolling blackouts or brownouts. That would be devastating for the manufacturing sector. You can't make products and get them to the marketplace without reliable and affordable energy. So we need to make sure that we have the energy infrastructure in place to deliver that energy both to homeowners and businesses. And unfortunately, what we've been seeing with energy is huge price spikes. And that's energy that takes the form of electricity that manufacturers use in their plants. It's the lifeblood of manufacturing. Electricity and energy is. And if we're paying more for energy in Wisconsin than our counterparts are paying in other states or other countries, that's a competitiveness problem for us. But we're also seeing it in terms of transportation energy. And so the price of gasoline, the price of diesel has gone up, and all of us are feeling that. But for manufacturers, and they have long-term contracts to be the supplier for their customers, oftentimes they're locked into certain price points mm-hmm. for delivering their goods. And so they're really getting hurt. The high cost of electricity and the high cost of diesel, they're not able to recover a lot of those high costs because they're locked into contracts, and it's really hurting the manufacturing sector right now. And we need to change our energy policies to reflect that competitiveness concern.
How might expanded use of power sources, green energy like wind and solar, affect the manufacturing industry?
Well, I think that if we're smart, we want to have an all-of-the-above energy policy, and that includes wind and solar. I think that wind and solar absolutely should be part of the mix. Unfortunately, I think we've got some politicians who say we should only have wind and solar, and we should get rid of coal-fired electricity, and we should get rid of natural gas, and we should get rid of gasoline. I think that's an incredibly unrealistic and short-sighted energy policy, and frankly, it's why we're seeing ourselves in the situation we're in right now, because it's ultimately that's a strategy for energy scarcity. And when you have scarcity of something and demand stays the same, prices go up. And that's exactly what's happening. The reason gas prices are so high is because we have energy policies that say we don't want to use fossil fuels. Well, gasoline is a fossil fuel.
But I wonder, do you survey your businesses on climate change and their sustainability goals?
Well, I think sustainability goals are great. And a lot of our members have very explicit sustainability goals. But part of sustainability is actually remaining in business. And it's going to be really difficult to stay in business if we continue to deal with double-digit energy price increases in Wisconsin. And, I think we need to be realistic. Look, wind and solar are intermittent sources of energy, meaning that they're not always on. They're only producing electricity if the wind is blowing or the sun is shining. And you can't just say, we're going to take all of the fossil fuels, which are very reliable and will produce energy 24 hours a day, and completely replace them with energy sources like wind and solar that are only on some hours of the day. It just doesn't work. We got to find a balance. And right now, we don't have energy policies that are seeking to find that balance. We have energy policies like the one that President Biden and Governor Evers are in favor of, that say we got to switch everything to wind and solar.
Let's just pause right here, take a quick question from Jane in Suamico. Jane, hi, you're on with Scott Manley of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce.
Hello. Unions used to have training programs and apprenticeship programs. It feels like the undermining of unions that's happened over the last 10 years has removed opportunities for young people to learn on the job. It also caused Wisconsin taxpayers to pay for technical college expansions instead of businesses paying for training themselves.
And
I'd
Jane,
like his comments.
Yes, thank you, Jane. We're short on time. Scott, go ahead.
I will just say that unions continue to do an awful lot of training, especially the operating engineers, the carpenters union. They have extensive training programs where they teach young people how to operate heavy machinery and how to engage in the building construction trades. So I would disagree with the comment that just because we have fewer union members in Wisconsin today than we did 10 years ago, that we have less training. That's simply not the case.
Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Scott Manley, Executive Vice President of Government Relations with Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Just ahead, the WASA School Board and others around Wisconsin are at odds over how to teach sex education, and we'll look into that. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.